good afternoon. Happy Healthy Tuesday to all of you. I am Elizabeth Barrett, wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, emotion worker. And this month, I am also a student because I am handing over the mic to two capable guest hosts who are going to be kind of navigating with us throughout the rest of this month of July. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And because it is July, it is also BIPOC Mental Health Awareness Month. For those of you who might not be familiar with the term, BIPOC stands for Black, Indigenous, People of Color. And Mental Health Awareness Month is to center on those issues that are critical to this population, to these communities that quite often aren't met by traditional talk therapies or regular therapies. And it's apropos because as we continue as the nation to struggle with and get a handle on the pandemic that has hit BIPOC communities at greater levels than other communities, as we continue to hear the voices of protest continue to grow around the world, not just here, but around the world. We feel the tensions of inequity in every country starting to mount as people are taking to the streets and speaking out against all of the isms of social injustice and our systemic institutionalized programs and traditional relationships that hold these injustices in place. And people are stepping out at a time when they probably should be staying home, but that tells you how incredibly important the movement is right now in July 2020. And interestingly, you would think at this time we would most need the comfort of strong, committed relationships, that we would need to have a really strong sense of who our people are, who we can count on, those intimate relationships that kind of shelter us from the storm. But unfortunately, at this moment in history, we find ourselves at a time when marriage rates have declined by 60 to 70% since the 1970s, and we've seen cohabitation rise by over 500% since the 1960s. And we have research upon research that shows the instability of marriages and intimate relationships, and that the Gen Millennials and the Gen Zs especially are really moving away from those traditional ideas of intimate relationships, partnerships, marriage as an institution. And when you think about marriage, it is one of the institutions that holds the isms together in injustice or inequity, not just as the women in marriages are kind of held as the idea of chattel. Originally, marriage was an exchange between families, and the woman being exchanged was the chattel, the ownership. And so you see this idea of marriage as more of the patriarchal structure being unpopular with a generation that's looking more for equality, egalitarian relationships, to have their voices be heard, to be able to pursue their individual self. So we have this crashing or this clashing of experiences right now where we need intimacy, we need connection, we need our people, and yet we've lost faith. This generation at least has lost faith, but the last three generations have lost faith in the institution of marriage as being a sacred place where we can be and feel safe and feel seen and to grow. And so it works perfectly that our guest hosts for this month, David Gudiel and Aliyah Shade, happen to be an engaged couple along with everything else. And so they've taken this kind of revolutionary stance in the midst of all of the changes in society to take a stand for partnership. And so we're handing the mic over to them to tell their story, to talk about what intimacy and partnership and marriage might look like in 2020. And although we can't take traditional calls as we have in the past, you are welcome to call in and share your thoughts or ask a question, and Sarah will be able to pass it along to us. Our number is 805-549-8855. So before we jump in today, I want to give you a chance to meet our guest hosts. If you missed us last week, why don't you go ahead and take over the mic?
Thank you. Thank you, Professor. My name is David Gudiel. We're calling from San Diego. I use he, him, his pronouns. I was born and raised in San Diego, just moved back, graduating from Poly with bachelor's in psychology and ethnic studies. I'm a yoga lover, artist, and joy bringer. I'm Guatemalan and Mexican, identify as queer, and as of June 26, recently engaged.
And I am Alia Sade. I use she, her, her pronouns. I'm a Black Chicanx, queer joy activist, birth worker, yoga instructor, flower child, survivor, and recent graduate of UCLA. I graduated with a bachelor's in World Arts and Cultures, arts activism, and a minor in global health. I'm passionate about reproductive justice and environmental justice, abolitionism, and envisioning a radically liberated world. We are super grateful to have had this platform for the past couple of weeks. And today we want to get a little personal, talking about the ways in which our recent engagement connects to our ideas of a more just world and what it means for us to be committed to marrying each other as Gen Z folks.
Ah, I don't even know if an hour is going to be enough to contain it. So without further ado, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Although we aren't taking calls, you can reach me through email, elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can also get messages to Alia and David through an email to me, and I will pass it along. You can follow me on Instagram, elizabeth_TRT, or Facebook. And you can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, and you can podcast the show or share it with friends by visiting wherever you get podcasts and look for A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll listen to a little music that has been chosen by our guest hosts and get back to start our conversation.
Lately you've been questioning if I still see you the same way. 'Cause through these trying years, we wanna both physically change. Now don't you know you'll always be the most beautiful woman I know. So let me reassure you, darling, that my feelings are truly unconditional. See, I'll love you when your hair turns gray, girl. I still want you if you gain a little weight, yeah. The way I feel for you will always be the same, just as long as your love don't change. No, I was meant for you and you were meant for me, yeah. And I'll make sure that I'll be everything you need, yeah. Girl, the way we are is how it's gonna be, just as long as your love don't change.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And my guest hosts for this month, Alia Sade and David Gudiel, welcome to your microphone. Before you just take it off and start running, why don't we start with all good conversations with couples, with your love story.
Okay. So it started in high school. I just remember, I'm going to be laughing a lot and I might cry. So that's a disclaimer. So just, you know, I'm okay with all of that. But basically, yeah, like I saw Alia in high school. I think it was like in 10th grade, and I kind of just seen her around. High school is 4 years. I had a really small high school, and she kind of came in 10th grade. But what I think what really sparked like the first interaction that was very significant was we talked about the Da Vinci Code. Like we like read the book together, and we were just discussing like just math and like all the things of the book. And we were just like sitting on the couches for like a very long time. I think that's when I first was like, okay, like I think she's pretty interesting. She's pretty cool. And, you know, just throughout high school, there were just so many. I had a job in high school. I used to work at a jewelry store, which comes back later in the story. And it was my first job. And I honestly used to take her out on dates. I'd be like, let's go out to eat. Like, we had an open campus lunch. And we used to spend so many dates, like, just going out to eat. We'd like to eat sushi, carne asada fries, like, just it all. We'd go to downtown. and we would in downtown, we'd always explore together. We'd go to the mall together all the time. And just like these little things. And I think we also did, we were involved with a lot of extracurriculars at our school. So our school was health oriented, and we were both in the registered medical assisting program, and we were both like top of our class, like always passing the college classes. And I don't know, like, I feel like I always liked her just because of who she was. Like, she just made me feel so comfortable about who I was. And it was just very easy. And when you're in high school, you're like more shy about yourself, and you're like this little cocoon walking around, you know? And obviously, so I think it was like when I turned 16, I invited her to my birthday party. Like, I wasn't a big person on birthdays because I had birthdays where like no one would show up, and I was like, I get it, it's the first week of school, like no one still really knows each other, and like no one drives, like I get that. And then one day we were just outside in the benches waiting to get picked up, and I told her like, hey, what are you doing for the rest of the day? And she's like, oh, nothing. And I was like, I'm going out to the beach, like to Coronado Island, if you want to just come with me and my family. And yeah, she was like, I'm down. And we went, and that was it. That was like another one of our first dates, kind of like, she was just with family. And I remember she was carrying my cousin on her back, like giving her a piggyback ride. And I was just like, wow, like she really likes my family when I don't like them a lot. So I was kind of like, wow, like this person is just really nice. Like, she can find that kind of space for people. And then we were in health, like Occupation Students of America. So we did like decathlon together, and we did our speeches, and we'd practice with each other. And I asked her out to prom senior year also. It was one of those, like, it was funny because she was like, who are you gonna take to prom? And I was like, oh, just somebody. And she just kept asking and asking. I just wouldn't tell her. And just one day, like, I like asked our friend, like, hey, can you just distract her for the day? Like, I'm gonna ask about this little ice cream shop that we always go to.
Disclaimer, I was kidnapped. I was kidnapped by some of my friends at school, and they kind of held me hostage, and then they drove me to the ice cream shop.
Yeah, and in the ice cream shop, like, I had gone the day before, and I was like, I'm gonna come tomorrow, I need to know who's on shift, like, I'm gonna make a request, and then this request is gonna be like, this is the order. So we're like, you know, she gets there, and she's like, I've been having a day with all of like these friends, and I'm kind of like, oh yeah, like, what do you want, just tell me, and I'll go order it. And so we order, and I have like my friends in the corner playing, like, you know, like they don't see her, and they have like a big poster, like a banner. And sure enough, like, I go, and the order was like getting 5 scoops of ice cream and just writing prom ? In a box. And I like, so then I get the box, and my friends see me get the box. And as soon as I get up to, I open the box, and it says prom. And the banner on the back says, it would be super sweet and hella cool if you'd go to prom with me. And like, she just was so nervous, and she like kind of was like, oh my God, like it was just a surprise. And that's what I knew. I was like, okay, like, I definitely like her. And what's so interesting was that one time I asked my mom about us, I was like, you know, like, I'm dating Aaliyah. And she was just like, oh yeah, like ever since you first brought her around, like I always knew that she was like, you liked her more than a friend. Like, I just saw the way you looked at her. And I was like, oh my God, a mother knows. But yeah, and then senior year, we were going off to college. We went to prom together. It was like, she was so beautiful. I just remember being like, wow, like, I'm so lucky to be going with like this person to prom, like, not in the sense of like showing off, but in the sense of just like, wow, like, we've gone through so much as like friends and stuff. And we get to look really good together on our last day with all of our other friends. And then I told her I liked her, and in high school, like, I told her, and she was kind of just like, you know, maybe right now is not the right time. And honestly, like, she was right. That was not the right time for us today. Like, I'll be super honest. And we went through college. We went through college like our second, up until like our second, third year is when we started to reconnect again. I had other relationships, and she did as well. And one day we just reconnected because it was like final season and like fall quarter. And I texted her and I said, hey, I haven't heard from you much. Like, I saw you over summer. I just hope that you're well. And, you know, like, I'm going to stay for a couple of days extra and slow for winter break. If you want to come up, like, my house has extra rooms and any couches, like, you know, I can move around. And she was like, yeah, like, I'll go to SLO. And I was like, okay, let's go to SLO. And I told her, like, by the way, like, I still like you. Like, I just want you to know that. Like, so it's nothing, like, surprising. Like, you know, one time we said we wouldn't date, and, like, if it allowed to, we would. And I'm here claiming my shot again. You know, like, I want to do this, and I'm still down for it. And she was like, yeah, me too. And I was like, okay. And she came to SLO and, like, sit up all night talking. And then we did a sunrise hike at Terrace Hill in SLO. and she had just become a yoga instructor, and I was like her first student right out of her certification. And that's also like a place that comes later into the story. But yeah, and then one of our friends took us out to the beach and to like Morro Bay. And I just remember like spinning with her and dancing with her and taking all these pictures. And I was just like, she brings such a different light to what I know. And like, I still feel this like feeling that's not just like, oh my God, like it's just giddy butterflies, but more of a sense of like comfort and a sense of like, in a way, like freedom when I was with her. And then, you know, we just like defined it. We're like, yeah, like, you know, do you want to start dating again? Like, she kind of asked me in a certain way. She was like, you know, so are we? And I was like, yes. Like, I didn't explicitly ask, but she was one like, are we? And I was like, mm-hmm. So that's kind of how we like, you know, went up and down. But that's my side of the story. Those are like my bits and pieces.
The parts that were the highlights for you. But it sounds a little bit traditional starting out, that the kind of the crush and you asked her to prom and, you know, you invited her to come up to San Luis. So it sounds like the relationship is had grounded a bit in a traditional path. But Aaliyah, knowing you, you were not feeling a traditional path.
I definitely wasn't. And, you know, just to provide some context, I had come to our high school as a new student, and I was very different than a lot of my peers coming from a performing arts school to a health sciences school. And David was really one of the first people who was kind to me. And I was very open about my identities in high school. Like, from a young age, I've always been like, I'm queer and I'm an artist and I'm this and I'm that. And I don't think that a lot of people were there yet. So I was kind of in a place of thinking, you know, nobody's going to love me for what I am. I'm just, it's me against the world. And David was always a person in high school who made me feel quote unquote normal. But then in some ways, you know, he was very traditional with his way of showing me that he liked me. And I liked him too, of course, but I wasn't necessarily down with the traditional expressions of affection. And a lot of the times I would be put into situations where I was uncomfortable or felt like I was on the spot. But then I was just like, I love David so much as a friend. And I had this consciousness that he was doing the script, you know, the script of what society tells you you need to do to get a girl in high school. And it was interesting because in high school, I did tell him that I liked him over text message.
But it was messy because...
It was so messy. But, you know, I did open up to him about that at some point when we were maybe like 15 or 16. And then later on when we were moving to college, that was when he was like, okay, can we date? And I was like, no, because we're going to move to college and it doesn't make sense. And it was so beautiful because he actually came as a minor. He like went from San Diego to Los Angeles to surprise me at my college campus when I was doing a freshman like summer bridge program for underrepresented students. And it was honestly the best like taste of home to see him, because he's always been one of my best friends, despite the fact that I had a little crush on him. And he had actually told my parents at our graduation in high school that he was going to marry me one day. He didn't tell me that, but he told my parents that. So I was always just kind of trying to navigate, like, what do you do when like someone that you love a lot, like as your friend and you have a crush on, they like you too, but you don't really like the way that they're going about it. And I had to learn in some hard ways about like the expectations that were put on me. I was kind of told that, you know, since I'm a Black woman, I need to be with a Black man. And, you know, David is Guatemalan and Mexican. So of course he didn't fit that idea of what I was told that I needed to be loved by and who I needed to be with. So I went through all these experiences, these traumatic experiences in college that kind of led me to becoming a trauma-informed yoga instructor and working in that way. And then fate just put us back together in that moment when I was healing myself and trying to come to terms with what I thought love was and what it isn't and who I am as a woman. And then, you know, I ended up in San Luis Obispo and I had the best week that reminded me of when I was a child or something. And I was just like, oh my goodness. I remember why I liked David so much. And we kind of just made an agreement then and there. It was kind of determined by astrology and the stars and all these things that we were going to be together, but we weren't going to call each other boyfriend and girlfriend. We're going to call each other partners. And yeah, I was trying to be very intentional about that. And but in a lot of ways, David was always trying to sweep me off of my feet. And we had to navigate that and yeah. learn a lot and learn how to be our best full selves and be vulnerable, not play on the scripts that society had given us, if that makes sense.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest host for this month of July, Aliyah Shade and David Gudiel, sharing their love story. And today we are focusing on the revolutionary act of choosing to marry someone, to get engaged, to step into what is considered one of the institutions that holds people hostage. And so from your perspective, when you made that choice, Aliyah, there was something I wanted to go back and then you can tear from there. But you talked about the pressure you felt as a Black woman to marry a Black man. And you kind of glossed over how you came to grips with that and seemed to be okay. And then carry on from there.
Yes, of course. So once I got to college, I was very involved in the Black community. And I had met, so I was raised in a single parent household. So I'd never actually seen a heterosexual like relationship or how a woman is supposed to be loved, et cetera, et cetera. But I kind of got these messages from my father who came into my life when I was about 14, who is like a Black man that's married and in a traditional relationship. So when I got to college, I was really involved in the Black community and I dated a couple of like Black young men, and those situations did not go very well. And I think it was because, you know, I'm living at this intersection of being Black and also being Latina and like being from San Diego, which is just a very diverse place. And I was trying to almost act as if I was working to be the girl who a Black man would like, if that makes sense, or the girl who my dad wants me to be. And I had never been that. I've just always been this artsy, queer, just weirdo that was not going to fit into any of those paradigms that they had set up for us. And actually, those paradigms are rooted in colonialism and racism, mm-hmm. sexism and colorism. And all of these things, I felt that pressure on me. And it took a lot of unlearning for me to be able to recognize that I can be in love outside of that and I can follow my heart rather than what society is telling me I have to do as a Black woman. And then also having the courage and openness to be loved. I feel like I wasn't ready to receive love when I was in high school, and I always felt that discomfort around David because I felt like he loved me so unconditionally and just wanted me to be my best self. And I was almost scared of that because I felt like everyone else had all these expectations for how they wanted me to be. And I was used to that type of dynamic. And through my healing journey that I went through with becoming a yoga instructor and finding myself when I was about 19, by the time David and I were reunited in college in San Luis Obispo, I was there. I was at that point of like, I loved myself. Therefore, I was able to receive the love that he was trying to share with me. And I was able to see it from an abundance mindset rather than a scarcity mindset of only I can only be with this type of person, or I can only be in this type of relationship. And it was just kind of complicated because I was also navigating this idea of, I don't even know if I want to be with a man. And it's just lovely because David is who he is. And he's a, you know, a male-bodied person that is very in tune with his emotions, very, very just outside of the mainstream culture of what a man needs to be. So therefore, like, by being with him, I guess I, you know, get to be in this like heterosexual passing relationship, but I also get to explore my queerness and those other types of expression of gender that I'm interested in because of how he is and how he expresses himself.
Talk a little bit more about two things. When you talked about colonialism as being at the heart of traditional marriage, and what do you mean by that?
I think the way that my ancestors operated and loved is just so different than the colonial constructs, or even like, I'd want to say distinctly the Christian concept that's put on Black people. We had these histories of these polygamous relationships and polyamorous relationships and societies that were matriarchal. But with colonialism came the patriarchy and came this idea that the man needs to be the head of the household and he owns woman. And that's where we get these concepts of marriage from, at least to my understanding. And I always saw my mom as someone who defied that so beautifully, because she's a single parent and she's like someone who chose to be a single parent and is really proud of that, and always kind of told me you don't need a man. So I was kind of raised with this, you don't need that. But then also mainstream society tells you that to be in this patriarchal relationship where you're being catered to, like that's the right thing to do. And I think a lot of Black people, and all colonized folks, all colonized peoples, like we internalize those colonial things and think in order to get closer to the mainstream culture that we have to uphold these traditional values. So what you'll see sometimes is as mainstream culture is moving away from some of these traditional institutions, you'll see people of color, Black indigenous folks, colonized peoples moving into those traditional or modern or Western ways of being as they try to assimilate. And I really felt that when I was in college, and I really, because when I was in college was the first time that I was really in like a all Black community, even though I was at a predominantly white institution, I was in the Black community there. And I really felt that pressure and all of those internalized concepts, especially in the men that I was dealing with before David and I like came together as a romantic couple, because they were so out of tune with their emotions and didn't know how to express them, and felt that to be aggressive and possessive and to exert ownership was the way to express love. And I feel like that's what we're brainwashed to think under colonialism and slavery. And even with, you know, like the history of Black slaves in the United States, you see that marriage was something that we weren't allowed to do. And by the time, you know, the enslaved folks were liberated, they were really trying to uphold that nuclear family, like mom and dad, husband and wife thing, because to them that's like liberation because white people are doing it. But just because, you know, mainstream culture or white supremacy is saying that's the goal, I think that it doesn't serve us, because it doesn't allow us to be our most liberated selves all the time. And, you know, with this engagement that we're in right now and like with our relationship, I've always been curious about how we can work outside of those institutions and like love each other beyond colonialism, beyond racism, beyond sexism, and the expectations that we get just being a male-bodied and female-bodied person in our relationship.
That's beautiful, Leah. Thank you for clarifying. And David, you're smiling as she's telling this story, because it sounds like you've always been comfortable embodying your queerness, your multicultured self. How did you become this man of so many, you know, revolutionary ideas?
I think for me, like, being in tune with my emotions, like as a start, I think I will give credit to my mom for that. I too was kind of raised on a single parent household for a couple years until my mom remarried when I was 13. And like when I was a kid, like I would cry and she'd be like, it's okay to cry. And like, I'm here and I love you. And she really tried to embody unconditional love with me. And even as a growing up, like, I always got these expectations that, you know, you've got to fight with your little cousin and go to blows. And I'd be like, no, like, I don't want to fight. And just as I went on with time, I think that was something I was very, like, I wasn't going to hide myself about. I read a lot of books growing up. And I think, like, I developed this, like, revolutionary, like, identity that I embodied from, like, you know, Harry Potter and, like, Hunger Games. And, like, just a Divergent. All these books that, the main character is so bold in what they do. And for me, something that mom always told me was, I love how you value your happiness. You always go for what you want. And I was, yeah, that's true. I think that for me, there was just a moment, like I used to get bullied a lot when I was in fifth grade. I think I really remember that. And there was a point where the guys kicked me out of the group, of the boys group, because I wasn't like a boy enough. And then the girls kicked me out because they were like, well, if the boys don't want you, like, we don't either. So I used to sit like in the middle between the long benches. And then one day just came up to me that I just didn't care anymore. I was like, I'm going to do me, and I'm going to do me so beautifully and just have fun with myself. I don't care what you think. And I think that came out of a defense mechanism that later became, I had to unlearn that too, because it was rooted in insecurity. And I learned that also in relationship. But even growing as I was liking Aaliyah in high school, I look back as to the reasons why I didn't ask her out earlier on or do certain things. And I think they were also rooted in colonialism and the, you know, like what was expected of me? I was scared of rejection. I was just like, you know, how is she going to like a little Mexican boy when she's like, I'm not black. And just, there was a time growing up where, you know, I was in the closet about being queer, and I was just, I don't know if it's because she likes me and she's going to like that part of me if I ever talk about it. So there were all these insecurities that I felt I couldn't share and be open with myself. But as I got to grow, like in my life, I also grew around a lot of women, which I'm very thankful for. My aunts always kind of like, they were the ones that were telling me, like, this is how you treat a woman. Like, you got to smell nice, look good, have your clothes pressed. And I always show up with flowers. They were that kind of like, you know, what they were telling me to look at. But I think it was in college where I got to understand it more fully and kind of more embody radical love and like what that meant. Yeah, she brought up a good point earlier. I just used to think that you had to swoon her all the time. And every time she visited me, I had to clear my whole schedule and plan every single hour of our day to the point where it was pouring out of my own cup for her. And she was kind of the one who told me that I don't have to do all that stuff. And just being me was more than enough, like, to spend time with. And I think that's also what I learned growing up too, that being in tune with my emotions, I used to think that I had to like overcompensate for my emotions. Like if I was too crying or something, I'd be like, I can make it up to you in this way, or this is how I have to show my affection with so much more. But I also understood that I grew up with witnessing domestic abuse. And from my father, those were my first lessons of what it meant to be a man, like be aggressive and hurt women. And I just remember telling myself, I don't ever want to do that. And I don't want to look like that. And so when I remember growing up with anger, I just remember the feelings that anger brought and like just how much harm it could cause. And I just remember trying to not engage with that feeling, which I guess turned more to sadness. But I think growing up, I started to realize like how things happen and how emotions work and how they're complicated. But at the end of the day, the expectation is, you know, to not hurt anyone. That's what I want to be. I don't want to be, if this is what a man is, like, I don't want to be what a man is. Like, I want to do all these other things. But, you know, I took ethnic studies courses. I started to realize what gender concept looks like based on culture and how society plays a role in what we learn. And I look at, like, you know, social psychology and what we learn through the media, through advertisement. I took classes with you about like family psychology and just relearned so many different things like throughout all of my years in college. But I think at the heart of it was just like love. Like I think, and I know I wrote this, so it's really funny telling you again, but I think that growing up, I was not loved enough or not willing to accept some type of love. But as I grew up, I just started to realize that I was loved unconditionally. I'm a product of love. And what I do for self-love and for others, like I don't do it with an expectation of something being returned. Because at the end of the day, like everyone needs a little love. And like, I know what it feels like to not have that love. And I don't ever want to meet someone and not give them a chance at that, giving that love or sharing that love. Cause we're all connected together. And that's kind of how I started to see things little by little.
You're listening to my guest host, David Gudiel, and his fiance, Aaliyah Sade. And today we are talking about the revolutionary act of making a commitment to marry your partner in 2020, when we see marriage rates coming down to the lowest levels ever in the history of this country over the last 30 years. What does it look like today when we are dismantling institutions and systems to commit yourself to another human being and to still retain who you are? I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. And although we aren't taking calls traditionally today, you can still call with a comment or question to 805-549-8855. We're going to take a quick break, listen to another tune chosen by our guest hosts, and we'll be back to continue the conversation.
Before I put on my makeup, I say a little prayer for you. say a little prayer for you. Forever and ever, you stay in my heart, and I will love you forever and ever. We never will part. Oh, how I love you. Together, together is how it must be. To live without you would only mean heartbreak for me. I run for the bus, dear, and while I'm riding, I think of us, dear. I say a little prayer for you. At work, I just take time, and all through my coffee break time, I say a little prayer for you. Forever and ever, you stay in my heart, and I will love you forever and ever. We never will part. Oh, how I love you. Together, together is how it must be.
Hi, welcome back. This is David Gudio.
And Aliyah Sade. Thank y'all so much for listening. So we're going to continue talking about what does marriage mean to us at this point in our society where a lot of people are moving away from that traditional form of commitment and what we think radical love is. I guess I'll start off. I really think radical love is loving someone and enabling them to be their freest and most abundant self. And I think anything short of that is just a toxic attachment parading around as love. What would you say about that, love?
I would say that unconditional love is looking beyond yourself and how everyone is connected, and the wellness of others is also the wellness of yourself too, and how you hold space for people on their journey towards wellness.
And I think when we're thinking about radical love, you know, we shared a bit of our story before, and we shared how we think that colonialism and systems of oppression kind of make their way into our relationship. And I think I would really like to also add to radical love that it means learning, especially for our relationship. You know, I'm Black and David is Latino. Like, we have to learn to unlearn a lot of the anti-Blackness, anti-indigeneity, transphobia, homophobia, all these things in order to love each other fully and allow each other the space to grow, transform. And I think that, you know, we've done a lot of that in our relationship. In the past, we've been together as a romantic couple for 2.5 years, mm-hmm. and we've been friends for 8.5 years, just to give some context. And I think it's been amazing being loved by David, because for the majority of our relationship, we went to 2 different colleges. Mm-hmm. He was at Cal Poly SLO, I was at UCLA. So we were about 3 hours away from each other. But I was traveling for months at a time, and a lot of the time of our relationship, we were long distance, and I was going through a lot at my school and a lot in my healing journey. And he really was so good at holding space for me to go through that and not to internalize the experiences that I was having. Just to be candid, I was a victim in a criminal court case involving domestic violence and sexual assault, and that was going on for a year and a half of our relationship, and he just wonderfully held space for that, wonderfully held space for me, and through that, also through me sharing my experience with him and through loving me, I feel like he had space to question a lot about his masculinity. Because he did kind of mention before, and not to speak for him, but he did kind of mention before how he was closeted in his queerness. And I think our relationship provided a safe space for him to explore himself more. If you want to speak more to that.
Yeah. Aliyah was always asking me, like, you know, are you a little bit gay? And I'd be like, no, I'm not. And I get super defensive about it. And I'd be really like, no, no, no. Because I think to me it was this big fear of, you know, if I say yes, like, will you leave me? Like, will you not like me anymore? And yeah, one day, you know, we just talked about like what it means to be queer. And I was just like, yeah, we were at High Street Deli having a sandwich. And she asked me like, you know, babe, would you be comfortable using this term queer? And just to like, you know, expand on that, queer back before it was used against like the LGBTQ community, but it was also used as a slur. And it was later reclaimed. And it kind of means just outside of the dominant culture or against the dominant culture. So to me, I already think that I was operating on that. I didn't see attraction as I'm attracted to just men or women. It's like I'm attracted to, you know, masculinity and femininity, the way it looks or the way that they interact with me outside of that, not just their physical appearances. And all that came together when she asked me, she said, I said, yeah, I was like, I think I would be comfortable using that. And she got a book. She got a book on queer theory and she sent it to me. And I was okay, like, we're going to read it. And that day we just sat on our couch and we read the whole book in like 5-6 hours. And every single, and I highly recommend the book, had a lot of pictures in it. And every single chapter I would talk about a certain memory growing up. And I'd be like, wow, I didn't think that this was a thing and there's language to this. And she would say yes. And then I don't remember exactly the name of the book, if you remember at any point.
I believe it's a, we will mention it at the end of the show.
Yeah, we'll get it by the end of the show. But yeah, that book really helped me come out and be more comfortable. And I just started to realize that the more truth I, because this is what I think. When you lie to someone, you're lying to yourself first, because at the end of the day, your truth exists within you wherever you go, and you're just sharing that lie with anyone else. So I started to realize, why do I have to lie to myself to lie to her when she wants to love me for who I am? And this is who I am. And she, I also is queer. So why would I reject that? But it was this deep rooted thing that I learned from my culture. I learned through, you know, as a, what is a man and what a man not supposed to do, that it was hard to let go. It was hard to let go of that. And there's so much insecurity and fear. But I think when I released that fear in me, it was like a crack that could just be filled with so much more love. And I just, I feel like I transformed and I grew from that, because it just allowed me to also acknowledge that I have these insecurities of my strangeness or weirdness that she also loves out of me. And she like shares with me too. And it's not just an individual experience, it's a shared experience. And together we can find language to break it down more and what the, add more to our lives out of it.
And just to add that book title, it's called Queer, A Graphic History by Meg John Barker. And it's super accessible, super lovely. Book, and it really gave us a lot of language to talk about both of our experiences. And I think that has been like another important part of being radically in love and having a radical relationship that is abolitionist of all these isms. That
was the gateway.
Yeah, it was really a gateway. And I think even with our relationship and the way that we've kind of referred to each other, talked about each other, it's always been an honor of the full person, whole person that we are. Mm-hmm. And I just have so much compassion thinking back at that moment when I would ask David, like, are you a little gay? And it was definitely from a place of, you know, as a queer person, I think like as a bisexual woman, like I just have that gaydar. And I think he was my primary attachment. So of course I was asking him those questions. And I didn't think about when I was asking those questions, the amount of isms that he would have to unpack and move away from and dismantle in order to step into that part of himself. So I just love that our partnership and our emotional intimacy has been a place of security for both of us to kind of explore those parts of ourselves. Even myself coming into a relationship, I was a completely, the way I expressed myself was completely different. I used to have like fake nails and my eyebrows always done and these eyelashes and these wigs and all of these things. And I think David, as I said before, has always been someone who's loved me in every expression of myself and just really provided space for me to be everything that I am. And I remember I used to ask him, so what type of girl do you want me to be? How do you want me to be? Like, what do you want me to dress like? What do you want me to do? And he would just be like, just do whatever you want. I'd be like, what? Like, this is the first time, you know, someone was just like, just be you. And I didn't even know what that was because I was always trying to, I guess, like, blend in with whatever I was a part of. Just being in college, I think that was definitely something I developed more so in college, of just trying to fit the expectation and trying to do things right, because I didn't know how to navigate as a Christian college student or as someone, like, I was in these relationships. I'd never seen my mom in a relationship, so I didn't even know how I was supposed to act, what I was supposed to do. And he really showed me as well that loving my natural hair, loving my skin, all of these things were just lovable and I should love them, and he loves them too. And there were a lot of times in our relationship, just being long distance, that we were going through our journey as a couple, as individuals, if that makes sense. So we were two whole people coming together. Mm-hmm. And I think that what we were taught growing up is your loved one, your partner, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, they're supposed to be your other half. Mm-hmm. And we had to really break away from that and learn to just be whole individuals. And we really had the space to do that. And someone actually asked us, I posted on my Instagram earlier about, do y'all have any questions for us? And we'll be talking about our engagement, our relationship. And someone asked us, how do you allow your partner to grow while also keeping the love strong and not growing apart? And a big part of that for us was we were never possessive about each other, and never saw love as something that takes hold of you. And I think our relationship has always been based on growth. And instead of having expectations, having the curiosity to see who will your partner become if you just love them unconditionally and provide them with the safe space to just be them.
Yeah, this is KCPBX. And thank you for tuning in. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. My name is David Gloubiel, and this is
Alia Shade.
And we're kind of just leaving this last portion about just some questions. One thing that I did want to include also that really helped us, and I want to shout out Professor Barrett, is at the end of my final for family psychology, she asked us to make a cohabitation mission statement. And she really emphasized the importance of mission statements and what they do to us and how they bring us together. And there are guidelines and sometimes like our anchor. So I just remember, you know, like Alia mentioned, we were long distance for so much of our relationship, and the quarantine hit. And suddenly we were together every single day of the week.
24/7.
And I just look back and I remember learning in class that if you think about our normal back before COVID, our days were 30, 40 hours a week at work without our partner. And then you like sleep for 8 hours. So that's already 16 hours every day. And how much other time do you spend intimately with your partner outside of that, outside of your other responsibilities? So I was thinking like we went from 0 to 100 real quick, and it brought out so many different parts of ourselves, but also opportunities to grow. And that wouldn't have been possible without our cohabitation mission statement. So I kind of wanted to read that to share what we have, and you know, as an example, what we thought. But I'm gonna read it together. Yeah. Okay, it says, "We,
Alia
and David, will not go to bed mad or wake up without expressing our gratitude to each other. We will respect and hold space for one another. Together, we strive to cultivate intimacy, honesty, and freedom. When conflict arises, we honor opportunities to grow and transform as a unit. We will strive to speak each other's love languages and remind ourselves of the love we share and have put much energy into building. We will embrace change and work to heal ourselves so we can show up for each other and our loved ones. When things get tough, we will remember it's us against the problem, not us against each other. When things get tense, we will laugh, practice nonviolent communication, and commit to radical love. Most importantly, we will love each other into freedom, break toxic cycles, and make love endlessly." And that honestly was like a thing that, you know, really brought us together during the quarantine, because
we would always refer back to it.
Yeah.
Anybody's tone changed in the room,
we're mission, like, statement. Mission statement, timeout, mission statement, let's go. We'd be like, we had people over and then something was happening. We're like, mission statement, let's go out, let's discuss, and then we can go back outside. And there was just moments when like the anxiety of the quarantine would just hit us and we'd be like, oh my God, we're just mad, and we'd take it on each other and we'd be like, let's take it down. Let's remember that there's a quarantine happening. Remember that we didn't spend this much time with each other before, and now we're learning all of these things together. And that has really been really helpful. It's been guiding us a lot. We are putting this one up in our tiny house. Maybe I have to make a new one, I think, because I think that was cohabitation where she moved in with me. But this is a space that we're building together. And that distinction is very important, because I know that there was some power dynamics before when we started to make a space, but in this one, like, and I was more privileged because it was my space before it was hers. But in this one, it's both of us. So it kind of feels like, even in that, we're doing a shift in our relationship of, we both have to commit to what we want to put inside, and we both have to agree or disagree to agree or something, communicate at the end of the day what we want. And it's been getting a lot better, because we just spend, there's no way to hide our emotions when we're with each other 24/7. So, and being like empath, both of us, we're very in tune with each other, that we're kind of like, okay, what's wrong? And it's just about really, I think another one that I learned was breaking away in binary thinking. Because before, I used to really, I was conditioned, like, if you mess up, like, you're done. Like, you are not liked anymore. You're not loved because you messed up. And that also kind of goes like the prison industrial complex. That's a conversation for another day. But the binary thinking was, you do an act wrong and you're therefore unloved. And I think that was a big thing in our relationship that had to change, because I was scared of messing up all the time. And I would tell her, like, I don't know what to tell you because I don't want to be wrong and mess up. And that's rooted in white supremacy, because it makes, like, for men to be, every time you speak, you must be confident. You must have your ego, lead with your ego. And I had to let go of that, because my ego was not going to warm me up and, you know, not make smoothies with me at like 7 a.m. And I had to realize those things. And that, I think, has really helped us also, because sometimes, like, I think friendship bears all the time, not everything is all good or all bad, and it's complicated. And that's what we have language for, and communication and honesty and intimacy to explore that. And what is that rooted in? And I think taking classes with the helping relations helped me learn how to hold space. And yeah.
Yeah, thank you for sharing about our cohabitation mission statement. And some people were actually asking, how do you know when you're ready to settle down with something? And I think David mentioned something very important about dismantling power structures in our relationship, and just how a lot of things about relationships and the things that are imposed on relationships are rooted in white supremacy and colonialization. And when we think about being engaged and being married, we're not thinking about settling down at all. We're thinking about growing mm-hmm. into our best selves and growing into freedom, and having a commitment that, you know, we're told that marriage needs to be forever, and if not, you need to get a divorce, and it's by the state, and it's going to be so scary. But I think that, you know, marriage doesn't really serve people unless people are willing to acknowledge, or specifically in our context, I feel like we want it to always be mutually beneficial for us. Mm-hmm. And we knew that we were ready to, like, commit to something like that once we had to be together 24/7 during the quarantine. And it only made us closer and more intimate. And we had to acknowledge so much within ourselves and break up all of that and just be more free. I think that that's how we knew we were ready to, like, continue doing that for a long time. And we're making our own rules around marriage. You know, mm-hmm. David kind of mentioned the things that he witnessed with his parents growing up, like just domestic violence. And I mentioned that I come from a single parent home as well. And I've only seen marriage from afar. So we're really making our own rule book, and we're having fun with our engagement so far. Just mm-hmm. like, you know, we're taught even with engagement that you need to get an expensive ring and you need to surprise the girl. And it needs to be this big thing, and it needs to be a video, but
it wasn't anything like that.
It wasn't anything like that. We actually went back to that Terrace Hill, which is where I did my first yoga class ever as a yoga instructor. And I taught David yoga, and he invited me there again. And we knew we were going to get engaged. We knew that we wanted to do this.
She already seen the ring and everything. We picked out the ring together.
We picked it out together, and check this out. It was only $6.
Come up.
And that's not, you know, we're trying to embody this revolutionary thing that sees love outside of capitalism. And I think we flowed with each other into wellness. We did our yoga session on the top of Terrace Hill. And then we were just sitting crisscross from each other, know him on his knees, know me like up above him, and, you know, none of that, just kind of expression of love,
heart to heart,
just open conversation. And the way that our families reacted to hearing about that, They were just like, that's it? That's all?
Where are the videos? Where are the pictures?
What type of diamond is your ring? And I was just like, it's a love diamond. It's a love gemstone. And I think that, you know, when we're thinking about the wedding, someone asked us, when's the wedding and what do I wear to it? We're still figuring that out. We're figuring out what does it mean to have a very intentional engagement mm-hmm. journey, and how are we going to bring our family and friends together? Because by the time we get to the wedding, we don't want it to be this rigid, super expensive event where people feel like they have to wear something specific. Yeah. We want it to feel like a celebration
of love and unity of families,
and for everyone to feel comfortable before we even get there. So we'll figure it out soon. And you've been listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. We're your guest hosts,
David
and Aliyah. You can reach out to us through our Instagrams. My Instagram is @TheAliyahShade, TheAliyahShade.
And then for me, my Instagram is DGUDIEL18, DGUDIEL18. You can also send an email to Elizabeth@TheReluctantTherapist.com. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, and you can share this show through subscribing through your podcast. Just search A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And, you know, we'll be back next week to continue these conversations that we've been having. Thank you for listening and for supporting the Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. Yeah.
Love and happiness, yeah, something that can make you do wrong, make you do right, yeah, love. Love and happiness. But wait a minute, something's going wrong. Someone's on the phone, 3 o'clock in the morning.